I'm Stephen Hundley from IUPUI, and this is the award-winning podcast, Leading Improvements in Higher Education, a service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Our sponsor for this season is the Center for Assessment and Research Studies at James Madison University. In this episode, we spend time with three leaders representing institutional accreditation organizations in higher education. Our guests are David Chase, Laura Gambino, and Mac Powell. David is Vice President of Educational Programs at the Western Association of Schools and Colleges, known as WASC, where he is part of the Senior College and University Commission. Laura is Vice President at the New England Commission of Higher Education. And Mac is President of the Accrediting Commission for Community and Junior Colleges, also affiliated with WASC. I know you will enjoy learning about the important role institutional accreditation plays on college and university campuses, all during this episode of Leading Improvements in Higher Education. On today's episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about all things accreditation. And in particular, we'll be spending our time focused on institutional accreditation. We have with us Mac, Laura, and David. Mac, Laura, David, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Great to be here.
I am delighted you are all spending some time with us. And we always begin our episodes by learning about the background of our guests. So we'd like to start there with each of you. So we'll ask you to begin by sharing with us a little bit about your career trajectory, including what you do in your current role. For this, we'll start with David, continue to Laura, and conclude with Mac. So David.
Thanks, Stephen. So I started my life in higher education when I went to school as a music major, and I stayed in that field through a master's degree and was involved in the music industry and a number of different things that seemingly don't have anything to do with accreditation. I then worked in a music school for some time, and that's where in working in university issues got interested in things surrounding accreditation and all sorts of other institutional issues in higher education. That interest really became sort of an overriding interest in higher education that ultimately led me through a couple of institutional positions to where I am now. And at WASC, I run our educational programs, which includes an annual conference, a series of workshops every year, a long form professional development program on leadership and accreditation. We do podcasts and webcasting and things like that, as well as I think I mentioned our annual meeting. So we do those things through the agency, and that's my primary area of responsibility with the agency.
David, thank you for that introduction. And now to Laura.
All right. Thank you, Stephen. So after a kind of brief stint as a computer engineer, because I'm a computer scientist by discipline, I started in higher ed as an adjunct faculty at a community college, where I then became a full-time faculty. And that's probably where I got started with assessment, first working with ePortfolios. As many folks know, I've done quite a bit of research around electronic portfolios and the connection with assessment. From there, I had the privilege to be one of the inaugural faculty at what was originally known as the New Community College in the City University of New York, where I was the professor with assessment expertise. It's now known as Gutman Community College. Worked as an associate dean there as well before I came to the commission about 4.5 years ago. So in my role at the commission, I do a number of different things. I work with institutions around assessment and institutional effectiveness and all things related to data. I support institutions through the interim report process. I oversee our annual meeting, similar to David. I also work with a grant that we have related to non-credit and credentials on the non-credit side. So I get to do a lot of different things, which makes it really fun.
Laura, we appreciate learning about your background. And now, finally, to Mac.
Well, thank you. I kind of had a wandering background as well. I started out as a graduate student, working with the NAACP, looking at discrepancies, racial discrepancies in sentencing in the criminal justice system, and did my dissertation on that. And rather than jumping straight into the academy, I went to work as a social worker in South Central Los Angeles for about 6 years. And after doing that kind of direct clinical work, I became a professor of clinical psychology and then a dean. And then at 37 was asked to be a college president, at that time, the youngest college president in the United States. And from there led three institutions, one of them a Hispanic serving institution and the other an Anapezi institution. And I got acquainted with accreditation because obviously I was writing and reading reports and served on visiting teams and was eventually elected to the WASC Senior Commission. So I got to see accreditation from a lot of different vantage points. And about 6 years ago, the Northwest Commission asked me to come and work with them to revise their standards, to work with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to place equity at the forefront, really, of everything that accreditation did at that commission. And for the last 6 months, have been president at ACCJC and beginning a similar process, trying to figure out how the standards and accreditation processes can serve students and really help promote equitable equitable student outcomes for all students.
Well, Mac, thank you. And like Laura and David, you all have varied pathways to your current roles. So we appreciate learning a little bit about your backgrounds and career trajectories. So Mac, let me stay with you as we begin our next set of questions, and then we'll also hear from David and Laura. In a higher education context, what is meant by the term institutional accreditation, and why is this important? What does accreditation entail? In other words, how does an institution seek and maintain its accreditation? And how does this type or level of accreditation, and in this context, we're talking about institutional accreditation, how does institutional accreditation differ from, say, disciplinary or specialized accreditation? Mac.
Wow, that's a big question. I'll try to keep it under a couple of minutes. So obviously this comes out of the Higher Education Act, and accreditation is really a quality control that exists on behalf of consumers, the public, and Congress, and the Department of Education. We used to be called regional accreditors or national accreditors, and the department changed that language about 18 months ago. So we are now institutional accreditors. We are all recognized by the Department of Education through a process of recognition that includes self-reflection and public feedback and a body called NASIKI, which is composed of members of the public and representatives from Congress. So in some ways, we are a gatekeeper for Title IV funds flowing to institutions. And so the reason why accreditation is important is, on one hand, it gives institutions access to federal funds, both financial student aid and additionally federal grants. So there is that element. I would say that also there's the element of conversations about quality. I would say that institutional accreditors bring together different departments, different stakeholders within an institution, the public, the board, faculty, staff, students, to have conversations about what quality means at that particular institution. And so why institutions would want to engage in this self-reflective process and who participates, we hope, is an inclusive process that engages all institutional stakeholders and brings peers from the outside that can help advise and support the institution on its ongoing institutional development. And how we differ from programmatic accreditors: on the one hand, often programmatic accreditors are not the gatekeepers of federal financial aid. And on the other hand, it really is meant to be, institutional accreditation is meant to be, a comprehensive look at the institution and how it functions in serving students across disciplines. So let me pause there and turn to Laura and David to help me fill in the gaps.
Well, Mac, thank you for that beginning answer there. Now we'll come to David to have him build on what you've been providing.
Thanks, Stephen. And Mac, thank you. That was a fantastic and very clear and concise description of a huge topic. Thank you for getting us started with that. I think what I would like to do is just add a couple of points of flavor, kind of some nuance to what this all means with respect to how accreditation works and what it does. One of the things that I find most fascinating about accreditation, and really why I am so passionate about the work that we all do, is that it's based on that notion of quality assurance, is really fundamentally rooted in the tradition of peer review. And peer review within the context of people who understand the type of institution. These are folks who work at other schools and colleges and have experience in higher education who come in and volunteer their time to serve as peer reviewers toward the mission of the institution. We're all geared towards what it is that particular institution is trying to do. That allows a degree of understanding about what's happening with respect to the students and the programs and what's going on at that institution, the students they serve, the community in which they are located. All of those things can be accounted for within this system. And the other thing I would add is that there's a fairly constant relationship that we all navigate between accountability and improvement. So when we talk about quality assurance, one of the things that often comes to mind is this idea that somehow you're accountable to X, Y, and Z, which you definitely are. Each of these accrediting organizations is bound by a set of standards that's also, I should say, put together by folks who volunteer their time and effort on commissions and as leaders. So there is an element of accountability for which accreditation is responsible. We also have a big stake in helping institutions improve and in using the process of accreditation and all the various components of it for an institution to be able to understand what they're doing and how to do it better and ways in which they can improve. So it's got a multifaceted set of things that it does, and it doesn't really fit in a very neat box. It's kind of hard to describe at some points in time in terms of how it all works. But at the end of the day, that notion of peer review as the mechanism for quality, according to the institution's mission and how we're both committed to accountability for institutions and the desire to help them improve, I think are pretty salient features. And I would love to hear Laura's take on this as well.
Well, Laura, you've been hearing quality, peer review, accountability, and improvement. And Mac and David, I'm sure, have taken all of the answers and all of your words and stolen your thunder, but build on what they've been describing in your answer.
Oh, it's so much fun to go third in this situation, but really, they really have captured kind of what is essential here, right? Those dual purposes of quality assurance and continuous improvement, the importance of mission, which in this region in particular, New England, we can't emphasize enough because of the diversity of mission of our institution and how it really serves as a driver for everything that institutions do. And I think, you know, we can't say enough about the notion that or the idea that institutional accreditation, our organizations are membership driven, right? These are member organizations. The members have a voice in establishing the standards, as David was saying. They are involved, you know, in the peer review process, right? We send peer members out to institutions that are undergoing a comprehensive review. Team chairs come from peer institutions. The commission itself is comprised of institutional peers and institutional representatives from institutional members, as well as from the public. So there's that kind of ongoing sense, like accreditation is driven by its members. So as staff, like I am not a decision maker I'm not involved in any accreditation decision. And what that does is it frees me up to kind of support the institutions in assuring the quality of learning that's taking place at their institutions and in their continuous improvement processes.
Laura, thank you for rounding out the answer to our questions concerning things related to institutional accreditation and what it entails. And since you went third in this last set of questions, let me ask you to go first next time. And you alluded to this in the answer about what you do in your current role, and as you were describing sort of the consultation role you play. All of you mentioned during your introductions that you've each worked within higher education institutions prior to joining your respective accreditation organization. So how have your campus experiences informed the work you're doing now in championing accreditation activities? In what ways have your backgrounds prepared you for this broader role in which you provide service to multiple institutions? Laura.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Thank you for that, Stephen. That's a great question. I mean, I think it's fair to say that, you know, my time at the various campuses has really been and working with institutions in various roles, consulting and whatnot, has really been invaluable in my work at NECHI in a number of ways, right? First, you know, my experience working with faculty in establishing assessment processes, creating learning outcomes, assessing student work, kind of going through and setting up those systems for assessment, kind of really enables me to support institutions at NECHI in engaging in that work, whether I'm going out and, you know, speaking or running workshops, providing professional development, having that experience of working with faculty and student affairs staff in those efforts has really been valuable. I would say the other thing for me, I was incredibly fortunate to have been part of a new institution that had to go through the entire accreditation process, you know, from eligibility to candidacy through initial accreditation. So I've been in that side of the accreditation process, which now helps me working with institutions and going through that process, whether it's, you know, the eligibility candidacy process or accreditation and reaccreditation.
Laura, thanks for sharing how your background informs your current work. And let me now come to Mac for his response.
Wow, I think that was just fantastic by Laura. So I guess first off, maybe, you know, as the clinical psychology professor, I think about part of the work of going to campuses is to engage in self-reflection, to be able to do it critically, and to be able to seek help as change unfolds around you. And I think being a professor, being a dean, being a college president, you know, being an evaluator, going through this process and being, you know, having sat on different sides of the table helps me frame conversations, helps me understand where there is potential and perhaps where there's resistance. And I hope always to kind of give respect that I understand what it's like to be a faculty member that's undergoing a review or being asked to look at their student learning outcomes. And I know what it's like for a president to be told that, you know, maybe their planning processes are not to the benefit of students, because I have been through similar processes and sat in similar chairs. So for me, I think it's about perspective, it's about respect, and I hope it's about the language that I use and the way I go about my work.
Mac, thank you. And finally, to David.
So I have a quick story that I want to tell that I think really fits how my institutional experience really informs my work in accreditation. Early in my career, I was working with a colleague and helping on the development of a jazz history course. And all of my, certainly my professional work in higher ed and a lot of what I've done surrounds arts education. So we took the program or this course forward to be approved for general education credit at the university. And, you know, pretty standard kind of thing to do. And the committee was certainly receptive for the inclusion of this course in GE and simply asked that we put together an assessment plan for this course. And we didn't really know what that was. And so we were directed to a person who could help us on campus. And we went to that person. And I had what I think is a pretty fairly, certainly at that time, a common reaction to what I was told. I really didn't understand assessment. I didn't know what it was. And I had a pretty bad reaction to it. And I came to realize years later that I went through something that is, please forgive the absurdity of the metaphor, but I think it actually really fits Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's five stages of grief. I started with denial. I was like, are you kidding? Why do we have to do this with our course? I mean, of course students are going to learn. I mean, it's kind of self-evident, right? That's why they're there. And then you go through a process of anger, and then you bargain, what's the minimum that I can possibly do? I can't believe that I'm being told to do all this stuff. And then you hit a phase of depression, like, oh, I guess this is just how it is, and we have to do this in higher ed. And then you get to a point of acceptance. I sort of took it even farther than that, in that my distress around around assessment at that time became the fuel for me to really learn about what was going on. What I came to understand is that not only did I learn a ton about how assessment works with respect, especially to the teaching and learning connection of assessment in higher education, I came to learn about what accreditation is, how it works, what its history was, where it comes from. And I really realized that this is a really super powerful tool if used in the right kind of a context, and was a bit mystified with a lot of the consternation that I had heard from colleagues and folks around the academy about accreditation and assessment and that kind of thing, and especially learning assessment. But I have come to a point where I fully understand what's at play here and what's in the mix. And while no system is absolutely perfect, this idea that you can not only defend but celebrate and enhance the best possible learning paradigm for within your discipline and assisting students and keeping your institution anchored to its values. These are all things that accreditation does. So that's really the background that I pulled from what I was doing in an institution that has definitely come forward, a deep belief in the educational process, teaching, learning, assessment, what's best for students, and really being able to do this in a way that focuses on what each institution is trying to do. So long story there, but I definitely came around through a process of having to go through all the things that accreditation touches in the teaching and learning context to get to where I am now.
David, thank you. You're describing perhaps moving from the stages of grief to what all of you have been mentioning, and that is operating with empathy, self-reflection, perspective taking, and respect. As we've been discussing, student learning and success is at the heart of institutional accreditation. In what ways do accreditors influence what happens on, say, an individual campus? And how do students themselves benefit from the accreditation process? For these questions, we'll first start with Mac, continue to David, and conclude with Laura. Mac.
Well, thank you, Stephen. So I think it's pretty commonplace that accreditors ask institutions to define student learning outcomes. And of course, the purpose behind that is so that students know what they're going to get when they take a course, and at the end for the institution to assess, did they learn what they were supposed to learn? And accreditation's role in this process is to support the overall process's effectiveness. It's to bring in consultants on a regular basis, peers, who perhaps come from similar disciplines or similar institutions, to share their perspectives and to hopefully continue to place students at the center of the conversation. You know, learning outcomes don't exist for their own sake. They really are there to support equitable student learning. And I think accreditation is effective at continuing the focus on those learning outcomes, particularly at times when campuses can focus on things that are maybe not necessarily directly student related. So it provides a vehicle for conversation and a point of accountability that can bring stakeholders together.
Mac, thank you very much. David, to you.
So Mac, again, that was really very clear and concise and so right on the target here. And so I'm just going to add a little bit to it. And I would say that, you know, there's a great degree. I think there in some ways is not as much influence as many people might think, and those who are involved in accreditation activity. So in some cases, less than they would think, and in some cases, more than they might think. And rather than just hedge on that answer, what I'm going to say is that really the standards set forward, the notion of understanding student learning on at the individual campus and how that works in conjunction to how it operates, it's really a core component of the entire accreditation process, student achievement, student learning, their success, quantitatively, qualitatively, in any of a number of ways where institutions are encouraged to really be able to tell that story effectively. One of the things that I think can be difficult for people to understand is that I feel as though the way in which, certainly in our region, the way we put it forward, it's almost more inductive, but yet people think it's deductive. What I mean by that is that we're not mandating any particular way that it's done. We don't have an ironclad rule that says you must assess in this particular way according to these traditions and with these all these conditions attached. That's not the case. It really is that we're looking to see how the institution is doing it and what is most relevant and germane to their programs, to their students, to the context of their institution, whom they serve, that sort of thing. So in that sense, it is a generative process of understanding the ways in which education works on an individual campus. So that's what I would add. And I think that there's people think that it is deductive, that they're being told here is how you do this, and this is the ways in which it must be done, which is certainly not the case here. And if you really do a pretty deep dive into the standards of all of the institutional accreditors, I think you'll find there is certainly an indication that we're looking at institutions to be able to find that in their own context according to their own mission.
Context matters and mission is important. So David and Mac have been describing the importance of student learning and success in institutional accreditation. Laura, your thoughts?
So I think Mac and David have kind of summed this up nicely. And so what I want to do is kind of focus on that second question, which is how do students benefit from the accreditation process? Right? So if, you know, as Mac and David were saying, assessment focuses on learning and improvement, and the accreditation process focuses on kind of not just student learning and success, but kind of institutional effectiveness as well, then students do directly benefit from the accreditation process. Because if we're asking institutions to keep that focus on learning and improvement, students then are going, there's going to be an improved learning experience in turn, right, for everyone at a campus. So, you know, while it seems like accreditation can be kind of separated from the student experience, like students do benefit from it, even though they may not be directly involved, although we love for students to be involved in the accreditation process, they do benefit directly from that continuous learning and improvement that institutions engage in.
Laura, thanks so much. So beyond a focus on learning, accreditation also examines other aspects of how a campus comprehensively functions. Mac was mentioning earlier about the planning process, for example. We also talk about financial health, policies and procedures, et cetera. So what are accreditors looking for here? What are some of the more common, you know, issues, if I could use that word, that campuses tend to face in their accreditation processes? For these questions, we'll start with David, continue to Laura, and conclude with Mac. David.
Thanks, Stephen. What's really interesting to me, I'm going to focus on two components of this, really that fall under that institutional effectiveness banner, one of which is program review. So one of the things that also sometimes is a little bit, seems a little tricky to understand is that, you know, as institutional accreditors, our unit of analysis, the focus is the entire institution. However, a program review, as in terms of what it does and how it functions, focuses in a much more granular way on individual programs, which is not certainly the focus of accreditation, but the process of using program review to understand quality within the institution is something that is pretty conventional and broadly established by institutional accreditors as an important tool for students to use with respect to understanding their own institutional effectiveness. So there's that whole piece of it, that program review thing. And then there's institutional planning and all the things that can go along with any substantial planning process, understanding what your position is within institutions who might attract similar or different types of students. What is the longevity? What's the sustainability of the model that you're offering, all these sorts of things. So I think that those are two examples of things that are really important within the institutional effectiveness world, and definitely things that accreditors look for. I would suggest also that we're interested in a lot of the intersection and overlap of these kinds of things. So what do you learn from program review? Subsequent, you know, even better, what's learned from assessment that feeds program review that subsequently finds its way into institutional planning? So those are some examples of what's happening there. Each of these tools in an accreditation environment, of course, being, we hope, used in ways that help to improve the institution as well as to demonstrate its compliance with the standards. And in the final analysis, the extent to which these things really are useful to an institution in understanding what it's doing and improving. So these are all things that we're looking for when we think about institutional effectiveness. And I'm really interested to hear what my colleagues here have to say about this as well.
Well, let's get right into hearing from Laura.
Okay, so when I think about this, thank you for starting us off here, David. When I think about this, I think about kind of all the different areas of the institution, and I look to our standards, right? And in each of our standards, there's language around assessment and continuous improvement and evaluation. So how does the board at the institution assess its own effectiveness and identify areas of improvement? How do you know your governance systems are effective? Your student services, what are the processes in place for kind of looking at data, evaluating what's working and what's not, and making improvements? Similarly, you know, with faculty and even institutional resources. So what are the kind of plans and processes in place across all the different areas of the institution that keep that focus on continuous improvement? So that's what I tend to think of when I think of institutional accreditation. And to your second question, Stephen, some of the more common kind of challenges, I think, with this are related to that, the connection between kind of planning and budgeting, kind of doing that evaluation, gathering the data and data in its broadest sense, quantitative data and qualitative data, using that data to identify areas for improvement, and then planning and budgeting and connecting resource allocations, and kind of both doing that and then articulating that clearly can sometimes be a challenge for institutions. But, you know, more and more institutions are doing really great work in this regard.
Laura, thank you to you and David for talking about the comprehensive and integrated fashion in which institutions examine and report on their effectiveness. Mac, now to you.
You know, I want to begin with a word that Laura used earlier, and that's mission. I think that, you know, every institution is different. They serve different students. They serve them in different ways. They serve them often at different degree levels and different disciplines. And one of the things accreditation does is to help institutions really focus in on how they're meeting their mission. How are the students being served, and how can they serve their students better? You asked the question of what are some kind of common areas. I would say that not necessarily within our institutional membership, but just across all of higher education, I think we're certainly seeing that there are challenges with finances. You know, institutions are struggling financially, and in a period of financial trouble, you know, how do you keep the focus on student success? How do you keep or improve equitable student outcomes at a period where resources are difficult to come by? So I think that accreditation helps serve as a platform for conversations to be had, for difficult decisions to be made, but always with the focus on the institution's mission and the students that they serve.
How is the institution meeting its mission? Mac, thanks to you for your response. So despite all of the positive things we all have been describing as it relates to institutional accreditation, there are, dare I say it, some who are, say, skeptical or downright critical of accreditation. What are some of the frequently cited critiques each of you have heard, and how are accreditors addressing feedback they are hearing from the higher education community? We'll start with Laura, continue to Mac, and conclude with David. Laura.
Thank you, Stephen. Wow, there's been critique of accreditation. Interesting. Now, I would say the one that I've heard most recently, and I've heard it a number of times over the past couple of months, and it's not new. This critique has been around for a while, is this notion that accreditation kind of reduces assessment to like a series of checkboxes, or is not useful, like it makes it not useful for institutions. And this baffles me because, you know, as David was saying earlier, and I think it's true across all of the institutional accreditors, like there's no, and I'll speak just from NECHI, like we don't prescribe, the commission doesn't prescribe a particular way to do assessment. And I've scoured our forms and our procedures, and I don't know of any checkboxes that folks have to fill out. We do have some forms, and yes, you do have to report on some common, you know, data points. But the commission really wants to support institutions in finding and developing and implementing processes for assessment that are useful to the institution. So whether that's using rubrics or using portfolios or bringing faculty together for a conversation or looking at, you know, qualitative student reflections, like there's no one right way to do assessment, and accreditation bodies don't prescribe to one particular way. So it's always baffling to me when I hear that critique, because I think all of the standards for all of the agencies, particularly for NECHI, are written broadly enough so that institutions can conduct assessment in a way that's meaningful to them in light of their institutional mission.
Laura, thanks for sharing some of the critiques you've been hearing. Now to Mac.
Goodness, Stephen. I mean, I think that Paul Gaston has done this well for at least the last 30 years. You know, I think that it begins with the question of value. You know, people often say that accreditation is either too expensive or too prescriptive, takes too much time on a campus, too expensive, et cetera. And I would just begin with, what is the alternative? You know, in most countries, there's a Ministry of Education that comes in and essentially tells the institution what it can offer and how it can offer it. And accreditation has a very different perspective, which is, we want to recognize that each institution is unique, and that you know, federal auditors are not necessarily the best people to evaluate whether a program is of high quality or whether students are getting what they need on the ground. We think that, you know, peer reviewers who are volunteers instead of paid federal employees is not only an intellectually vibrant colleague to have a conversation with, but it's also economically beneficial to all parties, because rather than the federal government pay for a ministry that would cost billions and billions of dollars, our system of accountability and quality assurance is done by us. It's done by professors and colleagues and staff and board members from peer institutions. So, and I would just say finally on the value proposition, you know, someone that travels to campuses that are struggling with issues, you know, bringing in consultants and paying consultants tens of thousands of dollars, really without any long-term solution or resolution, accreditation brings together people in a conversation that ultimately leads to change. Change that is transparent, change that is inclusive, and change that ultimately leads to stronger institutions and better outcomes for our students.
Mac, thank you. And finally, let's hear from David about some of the critiques you've been hearing.
Thanks, Stephen. And thanks to both Mac and Laura. Really good responses. I tend to think of it this way, that both, I want to amplify something Mac said, which is this idea that, you know, what is the alternative? And I look at it almost from a broader kind of systems perspective, you know, how complex organizations function and what is the culture around how that works. And if you look at government, you know, there's this really complex series of checks and balances that try to keep things in a situation where there's power relative to other entities in a way that hopefully does, frankly, in an analogous kind of way, what we're trying to get at an accreditation, this idea of both accountability as well as improvement. So there's this complex dance. Now, the fact is, we often don't know about this stuff until we need it. So here's what I mean. I don't know if any of you out there or any of us who, you know, are in this podcast or in the audience, I paid a lot of attention to what happened with the speaker situation recently in the House. And I'm not going to go into any sort of partisan issue on that. What I am going to say is, wow, when something like that happens, you really start to wonder, geez, what exactly are the rules on this? You know, and then you might have a little bit of sheepishness and think, well, I was supposed to learn this in civics and all that kind of thing. The fact is, you don't really know about all that until you need those rules, right? Accreditation, in my opinion, is kind of like that, in the sense that if you really dig into what it does, how it works, what is the complex web of conflict of interest kinds of things that are designed to be protected, as well as the rock, paper, scissor game of checks and balances, it really does do a really good job, especially, again, to go back to that notion of protecting institutional mission and using peer review as the primary driver of analysis. So once you have to deal with it and use it, you often come to the conclusion like, oh, wow, despite its flaws, there's some good stuff here. So back to the original question, I think it's often the case that people just don't have occasion to dig into the whys and the what's of accreditation. And once they do, I have found that many people, especially with knowledge about higher education works, come to realize that despite a lot of its flaws, it has a lot of strengths as well.
Navigating the tensions between accountability and improvement, managing complexity through flexibility, and ensuring that there's no one-size-fits-all prescription in institutional accreditation. Thanks to all of you for those responses. The notion of institutional accreditation may seem a bit, you know, amorphous or operating at an altitude far above where most of us might be working on a daily basis. So in what role do all of us play in the accreditation process? And by us, I mean faculty, staff, administrators, policymakers, partners, community members, and as we've noted, even students themselves. So how do individual people and programs contribute to institutional accreditation? We'll start with Mac, continue to David, and conclude with Laura. Mac.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. So I would say that in a well-run institution, everyone interfaces with accreditation, because accreditation is the opportunity to tell the institution's story well. You know, a visiting team may only show up on your campus every 7 or 10 years, but in the self-reflective reports that you're sending to an accreditor, it's really about the day-to-day activities on a campus that are contributing to student success. And I always say that, you know, a well-written self-study by an institution talks about all those stakeholders and how they're contributing to the final outcomes that reach really reach through the students and their lives inside and outside of the university. And certainly on accreditation visit, when a visiting team shows up, they generally aren't just speaking to faculty. They are speaking to staff, to board members. They're inviting the public in. So it is, I would say, an exhaustive community project that I hope lives and breathes on campuses, even when a visiting team isn't present.
Mac, thank you. You're reminding us of the importance of accreditation in telling the institution's story. David, to you.
Thank you. In fact, that's exactly where I'm going to pick up, is that notion of telling the institution's story. And that's something we're focusing on within educational programs at WAS quite a bit lately, in that, it's a complex story, no question. There's plenty of different types of data and information that go into this, but really it's a story that does affect everybody who is part of that educational community. Everybody whom you mentioned, Stephen, all the faculty, the staff, administrators, partners, community, students, everybody has a role to play in this. And sometimes it may be direct and you may really be tasked with a specific something to do with respect to accreditation, but simply by virtue of being a part of that community, there is a contributory factor to what happens with accreditation. We're trying really hard to capture, and then when teams visit campuses or go work with campuses in an accreditation context, we're trying really hard to understand and make sense, do some meaning making around all of the stuff, the fundamental building blocks of that visit, the data that's gathered quantitatively and qualitatively, and how does it all come together in a way that we're making meaning of it. So when I think about that storytelling piece of it, that really is such an apt descriptor of what is happening here. And it's an attempt to really plumb to some depths about the what's happening on that campus and how we make meaning of it. So I would say that everybody becomes a member of that community and a part of the story as meaning is made with respect to the institution's mission, what they do, how they function, and how accreditation looks at that piece of things.
In addition to telling the story, David's talking about the importance of meaning making in the accreditation process. Laura, your thoughts on how stakeholders contribute to institutional accreditation.
Well, both of my colleagues have just summed that up beautifully. So there's not a whole lot to add there. We too in NECHI talk about that idea of telling your story. And I agree with them that everyone at an institution, regardless of their role, is every day, you know, either implicitly or explicitly involved in the work of accreditation, whether it's just going about your day-to-day activities focused on, you know, the student learning experience, student learning and success, teaching classes, supporting students through advising, whatever it may be, right? That's the implicit part. And then I think it was Mac was saying, you have those opportunities periodically through the periodic review process to kind of pause and reflect and become more explicitly involved through that storytelling, through whether it's an interim report or a comprehensive evaluation, to really tell your story. And it's the telling of the story to the accreditors, but also kind of to the institution themselves. It's that moment to kind of stop and pause and recognize and celebrate all the great work that's been done by everyone every day at that institution. So accreditation, while it's periodically, you know, rises to the top and it becomes this very explicit process at an institution, it's the everyday work of an institution that really is part of the accreditation process. I do want to highlight one more way, though, that individuals at an institution can be part of the accreditation process, and that's by serving as a peer reviewer. We've talked about a number of times here kind of peers and team visits. The accreditation process is really driven by peer evaluators, right? They're core, they're central to what we do. The commission can't do its work effectively without peer reviewers. And we always welcome faculty, student affairs staff, administrators, folks from a variety of roles, assessment experts certainly are always in demand as peer reviewers. And that's another way you can become more explicitly involved in the accreditation process. And by serving as a peer reviewer, you can then you can then help your institution in the accreditation process. Of folks who serve as evaluators say it can be the greatest professional development experience of their careers. So I would encourage folks who are listening, if you haven't served as a peer evaluator, to reach out to your accreditor and find out how you can become part of the process.
Laura, thank you for sharing the important role peer reviewers play in the process and the profound professional development experience that provides them. And importantly, you mentioned that while accreditation occurs on a periodic basis, we all play a role in this on an everyday basis by showing up and doing our jobs to the best of our ability. From each of your vantage points, you have some unique perches, if you will, from your accreditation vantage points there. What are some of the major trends you are observing that affect higher education over the next several years? How are each of your accreditation organizations prepared to address some of these trends? For this question, we'll start with David, continue with Laura, and conclude with Mac. So, David, what are some trends you've been noticing?
Thanks, Stephen. I've got three that I want to mention, and I really feel actually that each of these three is part of the same thread, the same sort of issue here. The first of which is there's going to be, I suspect, and I'm predicting, a lot of even more attention and effort paid to credentialing, badging, non-degree type of programs, how we think of credit and awarding credit in those kinds of situations. What is a smaller unit of how do you demonstrate a smaller unit of learning perhaps than, and what are different ways of demonstrating that learning outside of the traditional degree formulation? And I think, you know, that is one piece that's also tied to this notion of affordability. People are need particular types of skills, and they want to be able to develop those quickly. And they may think that a college education is beyond their means, or and certainly there's in many cases it could be. But we're going to be looking at what it is that education is designed to do and how that works in different ways. And that's where the piece about credentialing and badging and other methods of packaging education together are going to work. Then we're going to really, I think, be faced with this issue of affordability. I'm not exactly certain exactly what accreditation's lane is with this, but it's something we're definitely going to be dealing with. And then that brings up a third piece here, which is that, you know, certainly in the WASC region, we have a tradition of really valuing what we call core competencies and the fundamental foundational pieces of education and the building blocks from which subsequent and more advanced ideas can spring. And one of those core competencies has always been information literacy. And I think that certainly the onset of ChatGPT and the amazing things that can do, I've been paying a lot of attention to that in the last few weeks, as I would imagine a lot of us are. It's in some ways turning the notion of some of the traditional, again, sort of content building blocks of education on its head. How we've traditionally done things is going to continue to change at an increasingly accelerating pace. So to be thinking about what is education, what are those building blocks, how do we understand and evaluate information? There's a host of reasons why that's important, especially given the experiences we've had in the last few years. What does it cost, and what role does accreditation play in understanding those affordability issues? Those are three big ones. And like I said, I think they're part of a similar theme, but we really are at an interesting moment with respect to how education works and the ways in which we're going to address those challenges from the perspective of institutions as well as accreditors. And I want to thank Laura for mentioning peer reviewers again, because boy, is that going to become so much even more critical to the process of making sure that folks who have experience in these issues and bring fresh perspectives to the table are willing to lend their time and talent to accreditation. That's going to be really important for peer review and for the process of accreditation.
Credentials, affordability, and content. David, thanks for those trends. Now to Laura.
Okay. Thank you, David. I agree with those three, and I'm going to propose three more to add to the list. One, I think there has been and will continue to be a focus on ensuring all students are learning. So by all students, I mean by disaggregating data according to the various student populations at a given institution, right? We need to make sure that all students are learning. So that continued focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion will be a major trend, I think, for the next few years. The second one is there's a trend, unfortunately, of declining enrollment and increasing financial challenge. I think particularly in the New England region, enrollments are going to continue to drop. What that means is, and the commission is monitoring that. We have new financial screens in place that are monitoring kind of what's going on at institutions, because we, of course, want to make sure that students are able to be well served at their institution. And then the third trend, I think we're going to see more innovation. I think we've started to see that coming from institutions, and I think we're going to continue to see that. Institutions are trying to think differently and be more agile and adapt to kind of these changing demographics and changing trends. And so I think we're going to see more innovation. And, you know, the NACHI is certainly supporting that. And they recently created a new policy on innovation, which allows kind of institutions to try something new that might deviate from the standards as they currently exist, to see what impact that will have on student learning and success. So I hope we see more innovation as we're moving forward as well. So those are my three.
Laura, thanks. You've added to David's list by focusing on diversity, equity, and inclusion, enrollment and fiscal challenges. And yes, folks, you heard it correctly, the word innovation associated with accreditation. So Mac, build on all of this with your themes and trends from your perspective.
Well, I think I would echo a lot of what Laura said, which is we're a country that is changing and changing rapidly. The students that we serve are not the students that we served 10 years ago, 5 years ago, a year ago. And what that is going to require is institutional transformation. We can't continue to be serving students of the past because we have students of today, and we have to be thinking about who the students of the future are. So certainly we need to be thinking about disaggregating our data, driving toward equitable outcomes. And I would say, you know, if I could spend my time talking about what accreditation does in response to these issues, is it brings stakeholders together to focus students and equitable student attainment as the center of the conversation. Like I said earlier, you know, institutions are made up of different groups of faculty, different groups of staff, different groups of students, different administrators. And it's very common for everyone to have a different priority or agenda or interest. But at the end of the day, what accreditation does extraordinarily well is it gets everyone at the table and says, we're all driving toward an outcome. Consistent with our mission, we're focused on an outcome. And I would say that what accreditors are helping institutions do is to realize that the most important conversation they can have at every meeting, not just accreditation meeting, but every time they sit down in a conversation, is saying, how well are we doing what we're doing? What's the evidence? What's the data? How is it disaggregated? What does it inform us about our current practice? What can we do better? What can we let go of? And I'd say that accreditors create the framework for that conversation on an ongoing basis.
Mac is reminding us of the importance of changing demographics, leading to institutional transformation, and the promise and potential of bringing stakeholders together to focus on, among other things, educational equity and outcomes. As we wrap up, I would like each of you to leave our listeners with a brief final thought. We always conclude our episodes by asking for guests to share with us words of wisdom. So we'll do so right now by beginning with Laura, continuing to Mac, and concluding with David. So Laura, your brief final thought.
Okay. Well, I don't know how wise this will be, but as I think back to what we talked about at the beginning, kind of the dual purposes of accreditation being quality assurance and continuous improvement, both of those really focus on student learning and student success. And let's face it, like, we do what we do. We're all in education because we want our students to learn and succeed. And as I think about that, and I think about the role of assessment in that, I'm always reminded of where the word assessment comes from. The root of the word assessment comes from the Latin assere, and apologies to my Latin teacher if I mispronounce that, but that means to sit beside. And so really the root of assessment is this notion of sitting beside the student. And I encourage folks to think about how you bring the student into kind of not just like assessment of student learning and assessment of outcomes through student work, student voice, whatever it may be, but how do you bring students and bring the student metaphorically or literally into like all of those conversations that Mac was just referring to, like, how do we maintain through all of this change, everything that's going on, a focus on keeping students at the center and bringing students into the conversation as best we can in every conversation about assessment, accreditation, institutional effectiveness, whatever it may be, just maintaining that focus on students.
Laura, thank you for that final thought. And now to Mac.
It's always hard to follow Laura. As you've probably heard, you know, throughout my comments, like Laura, I think that change is ahead. And probably the change is going to be faster, more rapid, and more disruptive than anyone wants, and probably more than anyone can foresee. And I think that COVID helped teach us that we as institutions can be nimble. We as institutions can be flexible to serve our students. I think we're in a period of reflection, but I also think we're in a period of fatigue and burnout. And so I think all of us working with students are both encouraged by what we've accomplished, but also recognize, I think now more than ever, how far we have yet to go. And so I think that what I encourage, you know, all of us to think about, again, perspective as a former professor of psychology, is that we're all in this together. We're all trying to work to a positive good, a public good, the good of students, that we carry good intentions, that we carry respect toward one another. But while we carry that respect for one another, we also recognize that all of our behaviors, all of our inputs will probably be shifting. You know, they will need to change. And for all of us just to have that self-reflective orientation that it's not a criticism of what you're doing now to ask, how can I do better? And I think that accreditation, really quality improvement, is really just about asking that question on a daily basis. All of us individually, we all play a part in this. Everybody on this call, everybody listening, everybody we work with, we all make a difference. And it, you know, this notion of improvement requires us all to be comfortable with that question of how can I do better for students?
Mac, thank you. Our final thought comes to us from David.
I really am impressed with the answers of my colleagues here. And I'm just going to add a little bit to say that I think individual and collective agency is going to be so critical, not only to accreditation and to the entirety of the higher education enterprise, but in our lives moving forward. And I think what I mean by that is that I think we're familiar with having the courage of our convictions, those who invest their lives and their passion and their energy into higher education and into especially the learning process and working with students and contributing to the life and weaving the fabric of our institutions. The courage of the conviction that we develop from that process, bring that forward into agency, into being able to act in ways that are responsible for our own interests and responsible for the interests of the communities in which we reside and those we serve, are really important. And I'm hopeful that I was reminded yesterday at the anniversary of Martin Luther King that the courage of our convictions individually and collectively is so incredibly important. And it's something I'm certainly going to carry forward. And it's something that's definitely been on my mind.
David, thank you. We've been speaking with David Chase, Mac Powell, and Laura Gambino, all of whom are representing institutional accreditation organizations. And we will provide in the show notes of this episode links to the respective accreditation organizations of David, Mac, and Laura. David, Mac, Laura, thanks so much for your time with us today. I know I have learned a lot and I appreciate you maybe demystifying for us institutional accreditation.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you, Stephen.
This has been Leading Improvements in Higher Education, the award-winning podcast service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Learn more and access other episodes at assessmentinstitute.iupui.edu. Our sponsor for this season is the Center for Assessment and Research Studies at James Madison University. Learn more at jmu.edu/assessment. Our podcast producers are Chad Beckner, Caleb Keith, and Shirley Yorger, with original music composed by Caleb Keith. If you know someone who might enjoy the podcast, please encourage them to give us a listen. We appreciate you helping to spread the word. I'm Stephen Hundley from IUPUI, inviting you to join us again for Leading Improvements in Higher Education.